Episode 4, The Funeral. It's about 2 weeks to the funeral now, and I'm making preparations. I need to get the front and back garden shipshape. Julie loved her garden. She was often pottering about keeping it tidy. I've given the task to my son to ensure the gardens are the way his mum would like them. He's done a good job of the back garden, and is now on with the front. About 3 years ago, the front garden had been totally paved in an Indian stone. It has three rectangular flower beds inserted into the paving. Julie had planted the flower beds and have a photo to prove it, but when my son was weeding them, he came across a thick stem of no more than 40 centimetres high, growing on an angle through one of the original plants. We didn't know if it was a plant or a weed, so we left it. It was located at the near side of the right-hand flower bed as you look at the house, and therefore it was the first thing that you saw when you opened the front door. The venue for the wake and catering are sorted, and I'm putting together some wording for the funeral cards. The gospel choir is booked, and the 8 songs are chosen. We didn't have time to discuss a funeral before Julie suddenly died, but I know she mentioned over the years that she'd like to have a gospel choir at her funeral. I bet she didn't think I'd remember, but I did. And she sent me a sign to say she's acknowledged and appreciates it. I'm on a roll. Things are falling into place, and Julie's keeping her side of the bargain by keeping my spirits up when sending me the signs. I'm happy to talk to people about Julie, more than they are most times. It seems as if they're scared of saying something wrong and upsetting me. I can't get any more upset than I have been. I made a decision from the start to talk about Julie, and that's what I intend on doing. You're going to get upset at times, at venues or in front of people you'd rather not. But what are you going to do? Hide away and only speak to people in your own home who you feel comfortable with? That's a recipe for disaster. You'll walk on eggshells for the rest of your life, edging your bets, praying that somebody doesn't say the wrong thing at the wrong time in the wrong place. That's how you end up bent with the sorrow and pain. Do that and you'll never stand up straight again. You'll never properly move forward to enjoy your life. Another thing I push myself into is to listen to Julie's favourite songs. They're so upsetting, but I've got to get used to them. I can't afford to have a meltdown in 12 months' time when one of her songs is suddenly played on the radio. I've added all her favourite songs to my Spotify playlist on Shuffle, and they'll be played randomly along with my own songs. Music is so powerful, it brings times and memories flooding back. It was important to push myself into a corner by listening to Julie's music, and believe me, in time, that sadness will turn to happiness when that memorable song is played. Remember, there's a huge difference between adding a song to your playlist and listening to them randomly while reminiscing, than repeating the same song over and over again while moping over it, feeling sorry for yourself, slowly sinking into depression. That's an absolute recipe for disaster. I can't stipulate how important it is to keep pushing yourself into difficult situations in life. It's so, so important. Don't ignore the sorrow or hurt. Face it head on. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And each time you survive or achieve something you didn't think that you were capable of, your skin grows that little bit thicker. Your confidence grows, your survival skills become more natural, and most importantly, you become that tad wiser. Don't be scared. You're stronger than you think. My children and I have decided on what outfit Julie will wear. It's a lovely dress that she looks so beautiful in. I'm sure she'll be happy with our choice. There's one thing that's bothering me though. Julie's nails were always perfect. Her nails were natural and she groomed them herself. I can't let her depart this earth without her nails looking immaculate. It's not going to be easy to find a beautician to paint Julie's nails. Who'd be prepared to do that? I could do them myself, but I want them to be perfect. I know who could do them, but it's a lot to ask of someone. My sister-in-law used to be a beautician before she had kids. I'm very close to her and she's not squeamish. I'm hesitant about asking her as I don't want to push her into a corner, but I know this will be important to Julie as it is to me. We also have something else in common. My sister-in-law is a widow after my eldest brother died suddenly 20 odd years ago. I've decided I need to ask her. She immediately says yes, and she's going to do Julie's makeup as well. I'm so relieved and unbelievably grateful. I asked her if she was sure, and she states that after what happened to my brother, nothing really bothers her now. Julie would be really happy that she's doing her nails. She's showing respect to Julie's spirit and love towards us both. I won't forget this. I've been to see Julie virtually every day the Chapel of Rest has been open. My daughter and Julie's mum have also been, and feel a lot better after seeing her. It's part of the recovery for both of them. They couldn't see her while she was in hospital, and I think your mind wanders more than it needs to in the situation they found themselves in. Seeing Julie maybe brought a bit of clarity. Julie's body held up well, and that was a blessing to us all. Julie looked like Julie. My daughter and her fiancé are around at the house, and we're finishing off the final arrangements for the funeral. We've done everything we can to make Julie's big day the best funeral ever. I've turned to my daughter and said, "We've done all we can now, and there's nothing more we can do. You can only try your best in life, and sometimes things are out of your control, but generally, if you give it your absolute best, then your positive energies will run with you and things will go well. I always give it my best, no matter what it is, but I heard someone say this a long time ago and it sums up your efforts and energies. Go in with an attitude of 100% and you'll come out with 95. Accept 90% and you'll get 60. Basically, it's saying, start with a mental attitude of trying your very best and your quality and energies will stay with you. Start with a slack mental attitude and you're in free fall. That's the difference between having good and bad energies. That's the difference between caring and not caring. That's the difference between succeeding and failing. It's now Wednesday the 22nd, the day before the funeral, and I've suddenly realised that it's bin day tomorrow. I'm now thinking, I live on a cul-de-sac and there's going to be bins everywhere when the hearse and funeral cars arrive. Late that evening, I went to put out the bins, and as I passed the nearest flower bed, I noticed that the weed that was no more than 40 centimetres tall a week and a half ago is now waist height, and I'm 6'2". Not only has it grown to that height in such a short amount of time, but growing up the sides of the stem are 5 or 6 round flat green buds around the size of a £2 coin. I find it quite amazing that it's grown like that, but there's 1,000 things to do before the funeral tomorrow, so I think no more of it and crack on. The day of the funeral comes. Remember the 24th, I keep telling myself. Remember the 24th. The sketchy predicted weather forecast seems to be wrong, and it's turning out to be a half decent day, which is fortunate as a crematorium only holds 90 people and there's more than that coming. Not bad for a quiet girl who kept herself to herself, was from a tiny family and wasn't even from this area. Julie's mum and stepmother have arrived at the house along with my daughter and her fiancé. My son and his girlfriend are also here. I'm wearing my wedding suit. I've been to the tailor's and had it taken in so it looks modern and fitted perfectly. I thought Julie would like that. We're all waiting for the hearse to arrive. The mood isn't too bad, but we're all a little subdued as expected. After doing so well all morning, my heart suddenly drops like a stone and I just want to burst into tears. I quickly go into a quiet room and have a word with myself. I firmly tell myself that this is not the time or place. Sort yourself out. This might sound a little crazy to some people, but I do this quite often. I work on my own doing joinery and building, and if the day's not going as well as it should do, I stop what I'm doing and I G myself up by quickly clapping my hands and firmly saying, "Come on, Phil, come on." It's similar to when your football team isn't doing well and you're trying to encourage them. What you're doing is waking yourself up with positive energy. Anyway, I'm back in control of my emotions when the hearse arrives. I tell myself to keep calm and soldier. I walk out alone to see the casket. As I pass the first flower bed, that stem that had suddenly grown to waist height has overnight sprouted 5 or 6 sunflowers, fully opened and perfectly formed. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. So beautiful. What a pick-me-up. Just as I'm walking to the hearse to see her. I know who I have to thank for that. What a girl. When I'm walking towards the hearse, a huge calmness comes over me. I know what's happening. It's a weird as hell feeling, the same feeling I felt in the hospital when Julie died. I know what it is, and I'm glad I'm not going to have to handle today alone. I stand looking at the casket in the back of the hearse. It's so beautiful and natural looking, with a simple yet elegant arrangement of roses woven into the wicker to form a delicate floral band. Rob, the funeral director, walks up to me and I tell him how beautiful everything looks. The neighbours are all out to show their respect, which is lovely. I remember chatting calmly to Rob, both of us looking at the casket. The longer I stood looking at the casket, the more in control I felt. I thanked him for doing such a good job and told him Julie would be really happy. I walked back into the house, passing the sunflowers along the way. We then entered the funeral cars and Rob walked in front of the procession. Rob used to be in the army and you can tell by the way he slowly walked in perfect military fashion. It was so respectful to Julie and for the family. He walked until we were off our road and well away from the house. The journey to the crematorium was about 10 minutes or so. And when we drove into the grounds, there just seemed to be a mass of people dotted all around the building where the service was to take place. As we passed in the car, I noticed everyone who had come to respect Julie. Family and friends, neighbours, work colleagues, people who we see on a regular basis and others who we hadn't seen for years. All in all, there were around 170 people. The respect that she had gained over the years stunned me. Little old Julie, star of the show. Good for you, love. Good for you. I got out of the car and headed towards the casket, saying hello to a few people on the way. The 5 other pallbearers were waiting, Julie's 3 cousins, my brother and my daughter's fiancé. I said hello and asked if everyone was all right. I felt I was the calmest of all of us. This was time to soldier. This would be the last physical contact I ever had with Julie. Stay calm, focus, and make her proud. Spiritually, I felt I wasn't alone. We raised Julie aloft and slowly rested her onto our shoulders. I could hear the song "The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face" playing in the distance. As we slowly walked in time towards the crematorium, the music got louder. We walked up to the front and gently placed Julie on the timber mount. I kissed my hand, tapped the casket, and walked away from her physical body for the last time. The service started and Clive, who was leading the service, was full of the joys of spring. This is exactly what I wanted. This was a celebration of Julie's life. This was to be a day to remember. Today was hopefully going to be the start of everyone's recovery. You can't start to recover if everyone's somber. You're not disrespecting the dead by celebrating their life. I think you're disrespecting the dead by not celebrating their life. After Clive had spoken for about 5 minutes or so, he invited me to stand for the eulogy. This isn't the first eulogy I'd done. It was my fifth, and none of them had been easy, especially the first one 9 years earlier, when my nephew had tragically died aged 15. The hall was packed with his schoolmates, and emotions were running high. That was the hardest thing I had ever done in my life, and it affected me for such a long time. But there was something that I realised afterwards. The eulogy, when done well, with a mixture of love, laughter and emotion, is therapy for the congregation. The amount of people who came to me afterwards to say hello and thank me was very touching. They all knew my name. I hardly knew any of them. It made me think, without sounding egotistical, you have to see yourself as a doctor. The congregation are hurting and your words need to be medicinal. They're looking for help, for someone to ease the pain just that little bit, to bring a smile to their faces again, to bring a ray of sunshine back into their lives after weeks of darkness, especially after a tragic or unexpected death. I was only allowed 10 minutes to complete Julie's eulogy, as the crematorium timetable is very tight, and we had to respect the next funeral. Within the first minute of the eulogy, I said, Clive came round to my house last week to find out what Julie was like. He asked me, who's doing the eulogy? I said I was. He then gave me this look, as if to say, really? Yes, really. This is my last chance to tell everyone what an amazing person my wife was, and I wouldn't miss that for the world. I purposely wrote these words and said them early in the eulogy to tell everyone that not only was I stood there to pay total respect to my wife, but also to tell everyone who was hurting, if I can show strength, so can you. Again, I don't want to sound egotistical, but in life we look for leaders and guidance all the time. As children, we look to our parents, in sport to our coach, in work to your manager, and as leaders in all religions and even animal groups. I wanted my children to know I was showing the ultimate respect to their mother. People needed to think, if Phil can be strong, we can. Remember, most were still in shock from Julie's death, as they didn't even know she'd been ill. I'm also a big believer that the wake is of mighty importance. This is the time when people really start to recover, when they start to laugh again. We'd organised Julie's wake with military precision. 150 attended. The rugby club where it was held was the perfect venue. The staff were absolutely amazing, as were the caterers. The gospel choir was always a worry as to whether they would be delayed or cancelled, but they turned up on time and were absolutely stunning. Everybody loved them. We finished with a slideshow to music. I remember when we were setting up the slideshow, you could hear a pin drop as everyone respectfully waited in total silence. There's one image of that day that surpasses everything else. As I walked around at the wake, saying hello to as many people as possible, I remember looking around and all I saw was everyone naturally having a good time. Laughing and joking, chatting contentedly. The joy on people's faces will stay in my memory forever. People were telling me how much they enjoyed themselves. One of my cousins stated it was better than some weddings he'd been to. We wrapped up at about 7:30 p.m. It was meant to finish at 5, but people just refused to leave. About 15 family members came back to the house after the wake for some homemade food that I'd prepared. The following day, I sent a message to everyone who attended the funeral, to thank them for attending, for their support, and to tell them that I was now going to draw a line and move forward. People kept saying to me that I'd done Julie proud and the whole day was amazing. I say this, it wasn't me who made the day amazing. It was everyone who turned up and paid respect to my wife. We could have organised the day to perfection, but if only 20 or 30 people turned up, would they be saying what an amazing day it was? It's the people who make the party, not the host, and I will always be grateful to everyone for making that day so special. It allowed me to look back with no regrets. Thoughts like that are what I've grabbed hold of and moved forward with. Those thoughts will always be with me. The following day, I knew we'd done what we set out to do, to give Julie the best send-off possible. This was another massive tick in my head. When I think back to the funeral, I think of it with pride and joy. It wasn't a sad day, it was a day of celebration. Again, you're not disrespecting the dead by having a good time. You're disrespecting them by being somber. People have said to me since that they wish they would have stood up and said something at their family's funeral, or that the funeral was at the time of COVID and they couldn't attend. The spirits are looking down on us. They are with us all the time. I've advised those people to hold a family gathering on the anniversary or birthday of the deceased and stand up and do your eulogy then. Tell them how you feel about that person. Tell the funny stories that happened in their life. Tell them how you miss them. The spirit will look down and smile just as Julie did. It'll put a big tick in your head and make the spirit feel respected. They might even send you a message. If you were unfortunate enough to lose a loved one during COVID and couldn't have a full attendance at the funeral, hire the crematorium or church, bring the ashes if you still have them, and do the funeral again, including the wake. Something that I said in my eulogy was about being grateful that everyone could attend Julie's funeral, because 12 months earlier, in the height of COVID, that wouldn't have been possible. Again, I showed everyone that there's always a positive in my eyes. The fact that we were out of COVID restrictions gave everyone the chance to attend, respect, reminisce and start the healing process, and that's something that we should be all grateful for. After the funeral, my new life starts, along with therapy. But a lonely life on my own is suddenly less lonely as I realise I was never alone in the first place.